Welcome to the Banana Split Project, the podcast that peels off the identity of westernized Asians, also called bananas, coming back to live in Asia. My name is Vivian. I'm French. My mom is from Hong Kong and my dad is Chinese from Indonesia. I was born and bred in France and I've been living in Singapore since 2006. Today, for our 16th episode, and actually our third in English, I would like to make you travel a little bit. In these times when most of the world is in lockdown, I think it's good to meet very diverse people for multicultural backgrounds. And today, actually I recorded this episode a while ago before the lockdown, I'm happy to introduce to you Cam Tu and James. So what happens when a Vietnamese-Belgian girl meets an American-born Chinese/Taiwanese guy in New York? Cam Tu and James met in New York, traveled together to Hong Kong, and settled in Singapore more than 3 years ago, where they recently got their first baby, Sloan. This wanderlust lovers couple share a deep connection, I can tell, and I would like to know more about their family story and cultural heritage, and what attracted them to each other. Which part of the Asian or Western side caught their eyes first? How do they perceive themselves? And how have others perceived them? In Europe, in the US, or in China even? I think James traveled to China and spent a few years there. So let's start now. Welcome, Cam Tu and James.
Thank you. Welcome.
So let's start from the beginning, maybe understand a little bit more about your background, why your parents chose to move from Asia to Belgium and to the US. So I don't know who wants to start first.
Ladies first.
Yes, so my parents were both born and raised in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City, to be more specific. Actually, it started with my dad, who immigrated to Belgium when he was around 18, 19, during the Vietnamese War. And he had the opportunity to go leave Vietnam and to go to Belgium to study. And through also political alliance that Belgium had with the government of Vietnam, could arrive in Belgium and be adopted. We call that adopted, but it's not like a real mm-hmm. Adoption.
Some kind of a political refugee.
Yes, he was a political refugee when he arrived in Brussels. He arrived in Brussels in 1971 or 72. And over there, when he arrived, he was actually welcomed by a Belgian family who is like a foster. So he arrived there and he studied. He studied finance for a little while. So actually, when he left my mom and my brother behind. So my parents then were separated for like 5-6 years. And only when my dad finished all his studies, find a job and everything, that he went back to Vietnam to bring my mom and my brother back to Belgium. They had my other brother. And then I was born in 86.
Wow, so you were born and bred
in Brussels.
Okay, interesting. How about you, James?
So my mom is originally from China. She actually met my dad while my dad was having a trip in China. My grandfather, my dad's dad, he went to the U.S. in the early 60s. So he was basically washing dishes and for about 5 to 7 years. And then he opened his own restaurant.
So you're already a third generation.
From
this side. Yeah.
Correct. So, and then my dad took a trip to Shanghai. He met my mom. They found love.
So you were born and bred in New York City.
Born and bred in New York City, Flushing, Queens. It's a predominantly very, very multi-ethnical area. You have a lot of Jews, you have a lot of Irish, Italians, Chinese, Spanish, Koreans. It's probably one of the biggest melting pots in the U.S. Flushing is actually the biggest by population Chinese ethnic per capita in the entire United States.
Wow.
It's bigger than the Chinatown in the U.S.,
okay.
New York City.
Okay.
And it's actually bigger than the Chinatown San Francisco.
Interesting. Yeah. So you were part of the majority then?
Absolutely. So my circle of friends were predominantly Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. You know, where we grew up, where my grandparents had restaurants, it was basically, if you walk down the street, 9 out of 10 people were Chinese or Chinese descent.
I'm sure you must have a very different kind of upbringing, right, in Brussels?
Actually, in Brussels, we do have like an Asian community. And I say Asian because you have a lot of Vietnamese, Chinese people, Indonesian as well, Filipinos. But I mean, it's a really, really small community compared to the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, where I grew up, we were actually not really involved into the Asian community, mm-hmm. at least until I was like a teenager. The neighborhood where I grew up was mainly, single Asian. So I attended school where I was,
the only Asian girl.
Mm-hmm. And it was weird in a sense, but also not, because I didn't consider myself as, a real Asian girl at that time. I didn't see the difference.
Yeah,
because I was grew up there. So
you just fit in.
Yeah, I just fit in. So I didn't see any difference. Actually, when I started to notice my differences,
mm-hmm.
then I started to feel uncomfortable or, let's say, struggling with my identity. Like, for instance, the first language that I ever spoke was Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking Vietnamese at home with my mother, my family, my brothers and everyone. And, when I went to school and I started to see, people are speaking another language. And I was only, two or three, right?
Of course.
And so other kids or other people started to notice that I was speaking another language. And I was like, okay, but that's fine, because kids pick up really, really easily. So I started to switch into French, which now actually became my first language. But then growing up, kids were starting, pointing fingers, showing that my eyes was different.
Casual racism.
Yes, right? But I believe it was quite innocent at that time. But then it started to be really, really burdensome when, for instance, when I got a little bit older and, for instance, my behavior was not really the typical behavior that an Asian girl should have.
So it was difficult for you at school or at home?
Actually, both. At school, I was considered different because,
mm-hmm.
I was pretty good at school.
Yeah.
So people started to say, well, that's normal.
Respect.
That's normal, actually, because you're Asian. Mm. And I didn't start to see,
that's a stereotype.
Yeah, what do you mean? So my friends, I had a lot of girlfriends, and then I was, I felt part of the group, but at the same time, they were doing less good at school. So but you're Asian, and blah, blah. And what do you mean I'm Asian? So at school, it was that aspect, right? It's not that I was blamed for being good at school, but it was more pointed out. But at home, it was more different. At home, it was more I was really talkative. The problem is for an Asian girl, especially a Vietnamese girl, Asian girl, you're supposed to be more submissive. You're supposed to be calm, and which I am not at all.
There are certain types of expectations from Asian girls, from the parents, from the family, right? Traditional family. So
the whole culture thing. So at home, it was more hey, why are you so talkative? Why are you, for instance, when I was disagreeing with something, I just said it out loud. I disagree with this. Or I was questioning. People who were senior than me, were older than me, whether parents, whether brothers, whether anyone. I was just questioning, not just to reply back, right? We just had three, but why do you tell me to just keep silent? Because I don't want to keep silent. I want to voice my disagreements. So for them, it was
They wanted you to be raised in a traditional Vietnamese way,
yes.
Respecting the elders.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But whereas outside of, our home, it was not like that. The world I was living in outside was not like that at all. Because they encourage you to speak up. They encourage you, to how to think. And to explain the way you're thinking, and so it was a real struggle growing up.
So James, did you experience this as well, having the home and school circles being separate and not really matched together?
I had a very different experience. So I grew up in a home where we spoke a different dialect, which is Shanghainese. My foundation, actually, first language was Shanghainese. So I was born and raised in Flushing. I spent my first educational years, I would say from kindergarten until about fifth grade, grew up in a very diverse area of Flushing. So my class consisted of Indians, Koreans, Chinese, African Americans, Caucasian, and American culture enforces great thinking, enforces speaking your mind and individualism. What came to mention about, girls, especially Asian girls being submissive and we call subservient, I have never experienced any of that. None of my parents.
So American Asian.
Yeah. And their parents never actually objected to any of that because their families, they worked very long hours. So actually we grew up not having our parents around most of the time. So we just had ourselves.
Mm.
So up to about fifth grade, my mom and I, we moved to an area called Long, which is kind of like the suburbs. It's basically 90% Caucasian. So it was a huge
turnaround.
It was a shock for me. So I was one out of four Asian kids. And that neighborhood had about 2,000 people. And that was where I was first exposed to what being a minority was. This kid came to me. He's like, hey, how do you see with those squinty eyes? And I said, what do you mean? He's like, your eyes are very slanty. How do you see, how do you see behind you? I was like, can't see behind me. Eyes are the same as you, right? And he's like, yeah, but chinks can't see you find that, right? And then, of course, I knew what change meant, and that was my first day of school in Bethpage.
That's very brutal, yeah.
I'm actually a huge sports lover. I played sports growing up, and I'm actually pretty big for the Asian kid. So they were just really curious, like, hey, you know, you're not like the little Chinese dude. Kevin Wong, who's the other Chinese guy, and then two other Chinese girls. And they were all just your typical stereotype Asian kids. They were small, petite, glasses. They just basically carry a huge backpack, went to class, and that's all you saw.
So you were not even like the other ones.
So
like the other Asians.
Complete opposite to every single Asian kid. I was terrible at school. I hated school. I didn't want to go to school. I avoided school. I cut school. And in New York City, there are dedicated police officers going around to catch kids
or
the school, their constituency. It's a dedicated police unit. People in the police unit know why.
Because, so they caught you.
Because I'm this big Asian kid, I always wore a hat, and I was always never in school. And yet, I was basically a picture they had in the car. This kid.
No.
Yeah. It was basically me with a big jacket. I didn't have a backpack, I always had a hat. I always wore a hat.
Wow.
So I moved, then my mom and I, we moved back to Flushing, to Queens. And that was probably the happiest sort of change during that point, because I just hated when I was. And I think my mom knew about that. So I went back, and then a lot of my friends that I grew up with, they basically scattered. So African-American friends went to African-American group friends. Indians went to Indians, white went to whites, and then the Asians stuck together, right? So naturally, I gravitated to the Asian group, and we have what we call cliques. It's literally you had your Italians, you had your Spanish.
Oh.
Yeah, everything. You had your Asian group, you had your Chinese group, and we hated each other. Yes, it was known we hated each other. And there was always fights.
Is it typical to New York?
If you go to the major cities, yeah. It's very common. So let's say you go to Houston, the Viets are the stronger population. Mm-hmm. If you go to San Francisco, it's Chinese, mm-hmm. right? But if you go to LA, it's a mix of Chinese and Koreans. Mm-hmm. So every Asian kid that grew up in a major city in the US will tell you that they know of this sort of clique structure,
yeah.
right?
Well, yeah, this is very different from a cultural upbringing because in Belgium or in France, I think it's quite similar. The educational system tends to flatten or
integrate
or better. It gives one model. But at the same time, I noticed that people then can't really identify. They realize they need to fit in. So you believe you're Belgian. You believe like you're everyone else. But then you also realize that you're own cultural identity is not represented.
I mean, we knew our identity. We know we were Asian Americans.
That's good. And you guys were proud of it.
And we put we put that label, and we were very proud of that. Mm-hmm. Because
that's probably the opposite trend for Asian kids who grew up in Europe.
It's funny because we see it as a positive. When we grew up, we had only each other.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, we celebrate all the normal holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's, but we also celebrated Chinese New Year, Full Moon Festival, and we just thought, like, hey, we have more reasons to celebrate.
Yeah, which is a celebration of diversity, which we can find also in Singapore, celebrating all different cultures.
Actually, I wanted Singapore for a very long time, but before living in Singapore, we were in Hong Kong for over a year and a half, James 2 years actually. But Singapore, you know, it's so family-oriented, kids-friendly, so what else? And also, it really promotes the diversity,
yes.
which is something that I want. Because between James and I, we have 4 different languages. We have, you know, French, English, Chinese, Vietnamese. I really do believe that only in Singapore we can maintain such a diversity, such a linguistic diversity. Because going to school, she can learn English and Chinese easily. At home, I can still speak to her in Vietnamese or even French at school, you know. So there's this possibility, as opposed to if we're like, you know, in the US or even in Belgium.
People choose countries for different reasons. What brought you to Asia? What brought you to come and...
What brought me to Asia?
Yeah.
No. Actually, because
where did you
meet? New York.
Okay.
Yeah. We met in New York when I was studying for my master.
So that proves my point. If we go back to the time we met in New York, if you had got a job in New York, if you were able to stay.
I wouldn't have stayed. No. But yeah, no, back at that time, like, we met in New York, and then it's because, you know, it was so hard and competitive to find a job. I'm a lawyer, and the market in New York is so competitive.
Yeah.
It's crazy competitive, so I wouldn't even, like, you know, waste my time. So that's why I was telling him, like, look, if it's not the U.S., I mean, if it's not New York, it's Asia, because I didn't want to go back to Europe. And so that's why we started discussing. He was like, oh, okay, and then little did I know, like, 2 days later, he's like, hey, I have an interview for, like, Goldman Sachs in Hong Kong. So, and I was like, what? I just mentioned, you know, I haven't even graduated at the time. And he was like, yes, yeah, so we started to, you know, the interview process and everything. He got his job in Hong Kong. And he was like, let's go to Hong Kong.
So just because she wanted it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then we moved to Hong Kong. And after Hong Kong, I was like, you know what? I don't like Hong Kong.
So that's why she married. She realized what I can do.
And then I found a job in Singapore. I was like, hey, we have to go down to Singapore. He's like, what?
But in the back of your mind, top of the world is still New York, right? Not even the US, I think is New York.
New York City.
James, apart from Hong Kong and Singapore, have you visited and traveled over Asia?
I have. And the reason why I have is I lived in Shanghai for about 9 years. I went there when I was 21 years old. So I chose Shanghai because two reasons. One, my mother is from Shanghai. I know how to speak that. Like, and number two is I wanted to improve my Mandarin. So the plan was just to go for 6 months and then go back home and finish school. And 6 months turned to 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah, because I had such a great time. I kind of found myself. I went to my mom's paternal hometown, which is Yangzhou, and that was about a 3-hour train ride. And when you're taking a train ride, you're going through the same tracks that my grandfather took when he was 17. It just sort of made me realize, because before going to China, I just thought like, oh my God, am I going to have hot water? Am I going to have electricity? You know, is there AC in the summer? Like, am I going to be able to get pizza? Am I going to get burgers? Am I going to eat rice every single day?
Stereotypes of someone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and China was different at the time too.
Right? It was completely different. This was 2004, right? This is when China really already doors were open, everything's coming in, businesses are coming in. So I was studying there, I met people that I've never met. I met Japanese people who speak Chinese, Korean people who speak Chinese, French, Asian people. I was like, what? You're French and what?
What is that? Yeah.
Right? And they're like, oh, I met people from Holland. Like, what's Holland? You guys speak in Holland, right? People who spoke Flemish in Belgium. Like, what is Flemish? Is that, as an ignorant American kid, I had no idea. I was like, wow, this is incredible. So I was, and this is what I was looking for, because going to school in the U.S., you learn what you learn, but where I went to school, we didn't have that. We didn't have people from all walks of life. We have a very diverse population in school. When you're actually in this campus in Shanghai, and the school is focused on language, you have literally 50 languages flying over. It was just the most enriching learning experience I've ever had. So again, I was in Shanghai, I worked there, I learned about the culture. I was not seen as Chinese, I was seen as a fake Chinese, I was seen as more American. I've gotten into conflicts in China because of this, because they felt I was betraying my country. I'm like, well,
not a real Chinese?
Yeah, I'm like, well, I'm not from China. They're like, well, where are you from? I'm like, from America. Where are your parents from? Okay, right, from China, so you're from China. I'm like, well, no, technically I'm from America. So it's interesting, back home, we knew our identity, we're not really... We're American, but we know that American, there's no such thing. But in China, it's like, hey, you're a loser, you're outside.
Yeah, once you're Chinese, you're Chinese. And
it's very, very extreme. So that was a huge learning experience. And just understanding the mindset, the expectations. And what also made me realize is China was always going to be there. China was always a great and a beautiful, amazing place. But it's not my home. So I decided to go home, which is back to New York. Actually, I never decided to leave New York. I was so happy to be back home.
And then you met her.
And then boom. Good thing that that we have in common, and also that we probably will be conveying to Sloan, is like we have this hunger and thirst to discover the world.
One of the best.
We know that the world is big, and we were not, you know, ready to settle and just to be locked
in one place.
Mm-hmm. Or if we were to, you know, to settle, like right now, we are actually in Singapore, it's by choice. You know, making the choice of where we really want to establish ourselves, and this is Singapore. Funny thing is that James, James is really, it's a clear cut, you know, he has his home in New York. He feels like home over there. Over here, he's also at home, but, you know, as an expat. It's still our home, but hey, his heart is still like, part of it is still in New York. As opposed to me, I never feel like home anywhere.
Even in Brussels, where your parents still are?
No,
and really?
No, like nowhere.
No.
I always feel like home. Either Brussels, I live in like 6 different countries. So not even like Brussels, Paris, I live in Vietnam for all of it. Hong Kong, Shanghai as well for a year. I've never felt home anywhere else. And I still don't really feel home anywhere. It's just that my home to me compared to him is not a natural home. It's a home that I'm building myself. His label of being
New Yorker,
mm-hmm. and American more generally opened him so many doors. Like, I've never experienced that with anyone else but him. Everywhere he goes, like, he's American because you can see the look. Even if he's Asian, you can see, like, hey, he's not a real Asian. Like, there's something like...
Not a real Asian.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, right? Like, physically, he's taller, he's big and everything, and then when he's speaking, people say, like, you're American? He's like, yeah. And I don't know why, it's just, like, you have this aura that is starting to shine all around him because he's this American guy, like, who's also Asian.
I get it.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was the same thing even in your experience in China because you were not Chinese. But come on, you had opportunities, job opportunities and everything because you're American Chinese. And they love that. The same way that they love American Chinese people here. It's equal.
It's an exploitation of my resources, right? Of my background.
Yeah.
Meaning, okay, we have this guy who can fit both.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also
you look at the market.
Especially in China.
It's an added value. You're taking like the good side of both. And that's exactly in terms of education what we want to give Sloan. You take the good side of every single culture that you may have, language that you may have or whatever, and you give it to her. That's what we want to do. Pick and choose. Mm-hmm. Whatever we can, like for instance, when we're speaking about Asian culture, there's something that is really deepening my roots is that you have this respect towards the seniors. You're taking care of the seniors. There is no such a individualistic, you know, aspect of your parents and grandparents or whatever, but you're taking care of them. They live with you. They stay with you. You know, like, so I keep that. But at the same time, I have this Western side where, hey, if I don't agree, you have to also listen to me because if you live with me, please respect my rules at home.
When you met, what did you see in each other? Did you fall for this American guy, the American, the American type of side of him? And did you see in her the European girl?
Yes.
I'll let her.
It was such a lie. Yeah. So difficult to answer your question, right? Like all my ex-boyfriends were European. I didn't know what I meant at that time because I mean I'm European as well, right? But then when I met him, I started to notice the difference in the American culture, in the European culture. So what it means, like for instance, with a guy like him, he was pretty much how to say like hands on everything. He was taking care of a lot of things. He was like really. I mean, I'm not going to say like European guys are not like that, but at least the guys that I've been with were not like that at all. Like they were more, I don't want to say like less manly. And he gave me this sense of like,
I think we lost the European guys. Okay.
You know, like the same way that I was talking to you when I said, oh, I mentioned I want to go back to Indonesia. I said, okay, let's do this. The decision making process. Maybe, I don't know, it's typical to American people.
Action people.
Yes, exactly. You want to do it, you do it. Mm. If you don't want to do it, you don't do it. But if you want to do it and you still succeed, maybe it's your fault. Mm-hmm, maybe it's because you don't put everything.
You don't take action.
It. Exactly. Mm. So that's what I liked about him. That was the beginning of our relationship because you know what? Also, I was in his home. I was in New York. So I was this new little girl. Like my English was not that good at that time. And so I was still like struggling to find my words, trying to express myself. And he was like, hey,
oh, so that was cute about her. That was cute about her. The European, not speaking good English girl.
And, you know, he was showing me all around New York. You know, he was showing me New York. I mean, yeah, we went to Rockefeller Center and stuff like that, but he showed me different areas that I think I was so impressed by that. I was like, man, I was looking for that for all my life. You know, I was looking for a partner to travel the world together.
Yeah.
Like, literally, move from country to country. And I know, like, if tomorrow we have to move to another country, we'll be able to do it. Mm-hmm. Because that's his personality, that's my personality. And the other side of it, and I have to admit it, is I wanted to be with an Asian guy. I didn't care Chinese. I've been with Chinese people, guy. I've been with a Vietnamese guy.
But European ones, I mean,
But I wanted to have an Asian guy. Maybe I'm wrong because I have other friends who can share the same value, actually, who are not Asian. But at that time, and deep down, I always thought, like, Asian guy can understand me, can understand my roots, can understand my value, can understand that, for instance, you know, my parents just left last week. They went back to Vietnam to visit my family for like 2-3 weeks, and then they were supposed to go back to Belgium, and, you know, because they live in Belgium. And they were with us for 2 months. I don't think there's a lot of guys who would accept that. You know, European guys who would think like, and that's fine. It's not, there's no right or wrong. Mm. It's just like, it's my place.
Tradition.
I need to have somebody who can understand that.
Mm.
And even him sometimes, because he did not grow up in such a setting. Sometimes I come down on him because like sometimes he's like, oh, you're going to stay that long? I'm like, so what? If they want to live with us, they can live with us.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I grew up. And that's my way of thinking, because my family is everything to me, especially my parents.
Mm-hmm.
But he came to accept it. And even now he's like, hey, tell him to come back. I wanted an Asian guy, but Western.
Yeah.
I know
a banana.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
like
that's
me.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think, I, yeah, we,
I know what
really,
you mean, because
it's
the, the common ground and
exactly.
the common values.
It's hard,
and
at least for me,
heritage.
I know for other people it's possible, but it was hard for me and not really conceivable to be with a local guy. Because they're too local, and I'm not. So I will not be able to give them, you know, what they want to fulfill the expectation as a daughter-in-law. And you know, like, being a daughter-in-law in the Asian culture is something. And I'm not that typical daughter-in-law at all, you know? So I needed both sides, and he gave me that.
So when I met her, we were introduced actually by a mutual friend. And then, I had lived in Asia, Shanghai for a few years. So I had a group of friends that were French Asian, right? They're from Paris or Chinese and whatever, Cambodian, all that mix. So I knew this demographic existed. I knew the personalities. I knew the dynamics. And then, back home, I was telling my friends, hey, there's, you know, in France, they have Asian people there. It's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
He told me that when I met them in Shanghai, it was like, wait, you're French, but you speak like Chinese, or like you're Asian, but you speak French.
They speak French.
And I told him, like, dude, you're Asian, you speak English.
Yes.
That's the same thing.
Yeah.
That's
they don't know this history.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
maybe that they're not aware of that.
Then I told my friend, and I told my friends back home, I said, hey, I'm hanging out with this French chick. And she's actually not French at all.
Even not French.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They don't get it.
So, and then I remember first meeting her. I was like, hey, you don't have a French accent. Because I knew there was a French accent.
Yeah,
I knew about it. And she said, I'm not French. What are you from? So I'm Belgian. Like, huh?
Where's Belgium?
What's Belgium? The only thing I knew about Belgium is chocolate, beer, and history.
Yeah.
French,
there you go.
And mussels.
And diamonds.
And diamonds, right? So,
there you go.
Speak French. I didn't know about it. But yeah, then we started hanging out with no choice. So for me, when I moved back to New York, one of the hardest things for me, transition back home, is because while you're living overseas, you're with expats. So you guys have your carbon life. So when I was back home, of course I have friends I grew up with, but we spent a huge part of the time of life with each other. And I never really met anyone that had a similar sort of wanderlust, is what we call it. A hunger for travel,
background
travel, someone that comes from a multi-ethnic or multicultural background, right? So there was always something missing for me, at least. And then after getting to know her, understanding what she loves about life, and traveling and experiencing things and what she had done up to that point, you know, living in different countries, living in Shanghai, living in Paris, whatnot. For me, it checked basically like 8 out of 10 miles. And then that's how it happened. And the fact that she suggested, hey, you know, maybe we can explore living in other countries. I was like, you know what? Why not? Like, here's my second chance to
travel again. To Asia.
Exactly.
So this time it would be with someone.
Yes. Who has the same values and the same hunger for
discovery.
And then that's what really excited me, because I was like, all right, I didn't plan to leave home. But then in the back of my head, if I were to leave home again, I would leave under different conditions.
Yeah.
That was
in good conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
and that was
we're
a condition.
Not student anymore, so.
With
another
a job long. And also not.
Wow, beautiful story. Okay, thanks, guy. I think we'll end up here.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for sharing your experiences with me today. It's so interesting. And I want to ask some more questions, but it's too long. So maybe I will do a video. So you can check it on our social, on Facebook and Instagram at banana.split.project. Thank you.